lot saving time or
something.
Oh, you know,
that's possible too. So we're about ready to go. Is Hugo around?
Yes, he's here. Now, I did also send you a link in Skype, which is a link that would take people straight to our Facebook group.
Oh, let's see.
They can then join in discussion and things like that.
Yeah, let me see if I find that. Oh, I see it. Yeah, farmingsecrets.com/Facebook. Okay.
Yeah.
That's
the easiest way.
Sure.
So, quickly, tell me, how long are we going to be talking?
An hour.
An hour? Yeah. Okay.
So, you guys, if you fall asleep, I'm just going to wake you up.
Ring a bell.
So let me hear Hugo and see how he sounds. Hugo, are you there?
Yeah, he's just coming back. He went away for a minute.
That's okay. I've got to start the show. Well, I just want to hear him so you all can.
He just wants to hear your voice.
Yeah.
So I can make sure it's coming through.
So I can get a level.
Do you want to say hello to
Hello, Patrick.
Hello, Hugo. Sorry about the time mess up. I just didn't do the math right, I think.
As long as we get going, it's all good.
Yeah, all right, sir. Well, you sound great.
Achieve what we want to achieve.
I'm sorry?
As long as we achieve what we want to achieve.
Yeah. You all sound like you're from Australia. Oh, you are. Awesome.
Yeah.
I knew that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's have some fun. Hold on, and we're going to start the show. We go live, and then we'll have the podcast, and we're live here 9 o'clock Central. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Did you have a question? Okay, so here we go. Let's go. All right. Okay. Let's go do this thing.
From the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Well, good morning. How are things? Really? No kidding. Really. And how's Aunt Marge? Good? Okay, good. Well, we're set then. Uncle Tony, he's doing it. Well, I'm glad you're all doing well, and don't worry about me. I just talk to myself. It's the 1st of May, May 1st, 2018. They used to call this May Day, and there was a strange thing years ago when I started in radio 50 years ago. That's crazy, 50 years. Anyway, where you weren't even allowed to say May Day on the radio, on the broadcast radio. Do you know that? Little known fact. Well, because, see, May Day was used for an emergency. If you were out in the ocean and a great white shark was going to eat your boat, you would say, May Day, May Day, May Day. I just made that part up. Well, this is OneRadioNetwork.com. We have kind of an earthy farming kind of thing. Agriculture show this morning kind of turned out like this, which is always kind of great. Next hour, Judy Hoy is going to be with us. Judy's up in Montana, and she does a wildlife rescue stuff, and her husband, game warden. And years ago, she started to study, many years ago, started to study the faces and the teeth and the mouths of these little deer and these little critters that she would rescue. And after a lot of research and science and looking and traveling, she's figured out that this is all due to glyphosates. Her new book is called Changing Faces: The Consequences of Exposure to Gene and Thyroid Disrupting Toxins. Whoa, that's right. She's a biologist, wildlife researcher. So that's next hour. So this will be a nice tie-in to our first guest. And they're in Melbourne, Australia. Husband and wife team, Helen and Hugo Disler. Hope that's right. FarmingSecrets.com. It's quite an interesting couple. And Hugo has a nice little blog, and he talks about how he's been, over the years, traveling around the world, talking to people, and how are you going, and what are you doing, what are you doing? And their whole thing is to help people to actually maybe get into the farming business, organic, of course, and to be able to do things with less work and actually make some money at it. And they have a whole membership thing that you future farmers can join up, and we'll tell you how to do that, and some CDs and information stuff. So it's a great idea. And it's about midnight in Melbourne, Australia. And do you all take a nap or good evening? Good evening, Hugo and Helen.
Good evening.
Hi, Patrick.
Hi, Patrick.
Down under, way down under.
Way
down under. Australia your whole lives, both of you?
Pretty well.
Yeah.
Apart from 4.5 years, from Europe.
Hugo's a war baby.
He's a war baby. Oh, good for you. So am I. Yeah,
I was born in a refugee camp in Germany.
Oh, you? I'm not kind of that boy. I'm not that much of a war baby. Whoa. A refugee camp in Germany.
Yep. Came to Australia in 1950.
I'll be darned. Yeah. Boy, so the whole farming thing is very exciting to you both. It's interesting you mentioned in your website the idea of being able to actually make money at growing organic foods. And I talked to a lot of the local farmers here, Hugo and Helen, and in the farmers markets. And boy, it's a real challenge for them to make a living, and a lot of work, but they love it. There's actually a way to do this and not drive yourself crazy and not get all angst up.
Absolutely. And it's going to be the future, Patrick. We're just seeing more and more people, consumer-led, really. People do not want to eat food with chemicals. Simple as that. They're seeing allergies and reactions to the food. So they're wanting to know and meet their farmers. And I don't know about where you are, but you call them ranchers, don't you? Not farmers. Is that right?
No, well, ranchers if they have a lot of cattle and stuff like that, but mostly farmers, yeah, farmers.
Mostly farmers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're seeing a trend. It's actually the fastest growing sector of agriculture is organic farming.
Is there a lot of awareness down your way with the whole GMO and glyphosate thing that we're going to talk about next hour? Did you hear the introduction with the glyphosate and the animals? Have you heard about this before?
Oh yes.
Have you?
Yeah, really? For a long time. And we don't have as much GMO in Australia. We're fighting anyone to be allowed to grow GMO crops here. So it's very small. It's only canola and cotton, isn't it, Hugo?
Yeah, they're sneaking it in. But generally speaking, it's those two crops.
Yeah, I didn't know they did cotton. We know of canola, but they do cotton too, really. Wow.
Yeah,
90% of the cotton grown in Australia is GM.
Really?
Yeah. And of course, that means you're getting all the particularly Roundup and stuff like that to control the weeds. Yeah. And we've actually just finished filming Dr. Arden Anderson, who's American, and it was a 3-day conference. And this is one of the activities we do is filming. And he's big on glyphosate because he's actually a doctor as well as an agricultural consultant. Mm-hmm. So he's at both ends on the farms, and he's also getting his patients coming in. And he said over the last 40 years, he's just seen, the foundation of health is just being destroyed because the food being produced is not really got much nutrition in it. Yeah. And the glyphosate actually disrupts the whole
Shikimate, yeah.
So, you know, we're very, very aware of it. And in fact, Patrick, I started being very aware of chemicals. I was a primary school teacher. Hugo had a store that sold farm produce. And one of the drums that was there when we were stock taking had skull and crossbones on it.
Wow.
And I said, Hugo, what's this for? And he said, oh, that's what farmers use to spray on the orchard, wasn't it? An orchard. And I said,
mainly orchards, strawberries.
But, you know, that's the stuff that's producing food. I just couldn't get over it. So, because my father grew vegetables and things like most people did,
mm-hmm.
and he'd use snail pellets or something, but none of this stuff. And it just became a great interest of ours to find ways of providing fertilizers and things to farmers without having those chemicals in them. But now we've gone one further. We don't believe that farmers, if they get their soil going and they really attend to their soil with composts and animal manures and things like that, you really don't need anything. You just need to pay attention to your soil to get it going.
Hmm.
And nutrition will come.
Hugo, when did the NPK kind of bagged up stuff, chemical farming, start down your way? I think it was in maybe the 50s in the United States, 40s, 50s it started. It's about the same there?
I'm not too sure. It started, I think they invented in South Australia here, they invented around 1880, they invented that you can acidify rock phosphate to mm-hmm. make it more available.
Mm-hmm.
That was in the 1800s. Now, then I guess it did start more so, as you say, around the war years, 1945, when they wanted extra production. Mm-hmm. And because they wanted production, they started to use what technology they had to get that extra production. But the extra production, we've got a huge extra production per hectare, but it's come at a cost because the protein has come right down.
The what has come down, sir? The what?
The protein in the wheat and the grains.
The protein. No.
Yeah, where it used to be like 16%, they're lucky to get sort of 9. And they, you know, they get a premium if it's much over 9 or 10.
So if you go out and just, like in 1960 or something, and you're just doing a whole huge, you know, whatever, 50 acres, we call them acres here, you call them hectares, 50 acres of this or that, and you're using all chemical fertilizers, there must be some nutrients in the wheat or the corn, I guess, right? There must be some minerals and vitamins?
Yes. There is. I'm not too sure what you're trying to say.
In other words, I mean, you go out there commercial farming, so people aren't, obviously they're eating chemicals and stuff, which is not good, but just in general, they are getting some nutrients, even with these chemical fertilizers, vitamins and minerals in a broccoli or cauliflower?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Each department, especially the American Department of Agriculture, has got the statistics on it, and just about every crop that they've looked at over the last 40 or so years, 50 years, it's down like between 20, 30 and up to 80% down in the vitamins and minerals.
From the 50s? From 1950? Or?
Yeah, from the sort of 1950s onwards.
Wow. They track that and they can see it's down 75% just in volume, like magnesium 80%. Or whatever.
Yeah, 80% and, like 20-20% down, depending on the crop. And they even grow tomato, they even registered citrus here with no vitamin C.
Wow.
No vitamin C whatsoever. So imagine eating an orange thinking you're getting vitamin C and you're not getting it. You might as well eat the peel. Probably there's more value in the peel.
What happened to the vitamin C?
Well, it's just not, the plant's just not picking it up because there's such a big disruption in the way the plant root works.
Hmm. We're talking with Helen and Hugo Diesler, right? Diesler?
Diesler.
Diesler, good German name. FarmingSecrets.com. You can also go FarmingSecrets.com/Facebook and get on there and chat it up about farming. And so you all have a whole program that you can help people to learn how to do this as well. We'll talk about that as well today, this morning.
Sure.
Is that right? You have people can sign up and take courses and things like that?
Yes, they can. They can go onto that website, farmingsecrets.com, and they can get access to what we call the 10 must-dos if you want to farm without chemicals. Mm-hmm. And then that will take you to a webinar, which we tell our story and we tell you about our club and what it provides for you. You also learn on that webinar the three basic things that if you're going to have a soil that's functioning, you need. And the other, just to, before we go into that, the other URL you mentioned, the farmingsecrets.com/Facebook, is a new approach of ours to just get farmers talking to each other. So it's free. It's a Facebook group. And we're really welcoming people to come and join the fun, discuss their problems, discuss things like glyphosate and mm-hmm. all these sort of things so that people can become informed. We actually called our company Farming Secrets. They're not secrets, but they may as well be because the mainstream do not want you to know about easy ways to farm without buying all the normal inputs.
So I guess this would be relevant too. We have listeners all over the world, no matter where they live, that can participate now with the internet. It doesn't matter if they're in Europe or in the United States or wherever, California or whatever.
There's people all over the world joining in and doing courses, and it's really exciting because, as you say, it's around the world, and basically soil functions, different types of soils. But for soil to function, you need that life to get going. And so, really, people are growing trees in the desert and things. You know, there's a lot happening with permaculture groups.
Yeah. You traveled a lot around the world just looking at talking to people and finding out what they're doing. I mean, really, is there that much? I mean, aren't we talking about just getting the good nutrients in a living kind of soil? I mean, what kind of things did you learn around the country that made all that time and effort worthwhile?
It's been a very, to pick up what I know or what we know, we go across many different boundaries so we can talk to farmers at different levels. It's come by just listening to farmers doing different things, and they're not farmers in any particular group. And you go to a meeting, for instance, one meeting I went to, they produced a ryegrass that would stop sheep staggers. And a farmer come up to me, and I was selling those sort of grasses in the farm supply store that we owned, and he'd come up and sort of say, look, those new seeds, they don't last long in the paddock. Give them 7 years and they're gone. And when you start hearing farmers make various different comments like that, you start to think, well, hold on, what am I selling this stuff for if it doesn't perform, if a farmer has to, do the same thing over again? And then when you go out in the rural industry, in the dairying industry, a dairy farmer would be ripping up his paddock every fourth year or fifth year because it was so full of weeds and hasn't got any desirable grasses growing because they've been damaging the soil with just common products like nitrogen or superphosphate, uh-huh. and then getting the right sort of grasses to grow. So every fourth or fifth year, they're pulling up their paddocks, they've got this rotation. So when you hear the news, things like that from your fellow farmers, you say, well, hold on, something's not right here. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Don't you want to rip up a paddock, put in turnips or oats or something like that in there, just so you can, the following year, you can renovate it with a whole lot of pasture seeds which don't last more than 4 years.
It's amazing that people growing up on the land or with a lot of land to work and all of that. I guess it just must be a programming thing that they'll just get into it and not really think about the soil as being living or putting chemicals on it. It's just hard to imagine. I guess, well, we hang out in the natural world for so many years, it's hard for us to imagine that people just don't kind of get it. But I guess there's a lot that don't, huh?
Now, recently we interviewed a farmer who's a consultant, mm-hmm. and he said that when in his days, if he had when he was dairying, that's because he's getting on a bit now, he would get 1 or 2% of the cows with mastitis. He reckons now the farmer he was talking to had 27% of his cows. Infertility. He reckons he'd lucky to be have 1 or 2 cows having not being able to conceive. And and he's saying the farmer he went and visited had 27% of his herd that he couldn't conceive. Well, that means it's not going to, they have to milk it for another year without giving it a break, and then they have to sell it as a chopper. And that same farmer who had 27% no conception, you might say, he said, I'm not bad. My mate's got 30%. So you get this sort of, as you're sort of saying, a stupid acceptance.
Yeah.
They don't even know they've got a problem. You know, another farmer we went to visit, he had rust in his wheat. And we thought, oh, we'll dig in the paddock and see what the soil's like. We couldn't get a spade in. We couldn't even get this. It was like concrete.
In fact, when we found it, the spade clanged as though it was hitting something. It actually clanged.
And we said, how often do you get off your tractor and look at your soil? And he said, oh, I don't get off my tractor. I'm a fifth-generation farmer. I mean, and that's what you're dealing with. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it? I don't get off my tractor. Around a little bit. Yeah. Okay, let's take a little break. We're going to take a little commercial break, and then we'll be back. If you have a question, we're going to talk a lot about soils and growing. Get some tips from Helen and Hugo Diesler. We're at farmingsecrets.com. They're way down under in Melbourne, Australia, and they were nice enough to stay up till midnight. Let's see, I must be, 12, 13, 14, 15 hours ahead, something like that. Something like that, 9, 10, 11, 12, yeah. 15 hours ahead of us. We should call them in the morning after the stock market and see what happened. Just kidding. If you'd like to talk to them, 888-663-6386. Email is patrick@oneradionetwork.com. I had lunch with Phil Wilson yesterday. Phil is the proprietor that supplies the far infrared saunas. He was in Austin for the Paleo Dude thing, and it was real fun, and sold a few saunas. They really liked it. And if you'd like to take a look at these, they're on a website. You just go to Relax Sauna right on the front page and click on it. You see a picture of it, and make sure that if you're looking at one, we've had people say, well, I can get this sauna for $600 and it looks exactly like it, but it's not. And these are just knockoffs, people wanting to try to build off of their reputation. They don't call them a relaxed sauna, but they build them exactly. But the technology is totally different. Material is different. The far infrared technology is absolutely different. They just make something up and they probably just heat it up and you don't know what's going on. This is the real deal. This technology developed in Taiwan, a medical university. And so the far infrared healing lights, this is really where the action is, even more than the sweating, believe it or not. I don't talk much about it. I guess I get so caught up with something visible, right? You say, oh, I'm sweating, so I'm detoxing. And it's great, believe me. Sweating is amazing. But that far infrared technology, Phil was saying, this is where the real healing happens too, because it goes deep, deep in there. Much more penetrable than the near infrared. I mean, you can get near infrared saunas. I saw some at the Paleo, and they have 3 or 4 of these chicken lamps, maybe 4 or 5 of these chicken lamps in a little tent, and charging $750 for stuff like that. I mean, it's just, I mean, come on. You can build that yourself. Anyway, but it's a different thing than the near-infrared, far-infrared, and this technology is very, very good. Excellent. And they've won lots of awards, so it's the real deal. And we offer you one simply by emailing me at $995 for the contiguous United States. That's the lower 48 kind of thing, excluding, of course, Alaska and Hawaii. But we ship them all over the world. We ship them to Australia, ship them to Europe, Sweden, couple to Sweden the past month, one to Sweden, one to Denmark, Canada, and we can ship them with the proper plug, too. So you people that live outside the United States, you have the funny plugs, and we have the right ones. Just kidding. And we'll ship it to you, and just usually a couple $100 extra. You'll end up paying about what the retail price is, $11.95, and we'll sell it to you for $9.95, plus the extra shipping overseas, and $9.95 in the United States here. So email me, and I'll give you the deal. It's the only place you get the deal. Don't just order it, because you'll pay the $11.95. Just email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Tell me where you live, and we'll hook you up with a sauna. The Relax Far Infrared Sauna. Previously with Brandon Amalani of Shen Blossom, talking about our very special ginseng.
And you don't want something that's been corrupted coming into your body. Like the ginseng is a super important example of that. You know, when you're using aggressive alcohols and solvents, it has a strange effect with ginseng, in the sense that when you're not only over processing it, but putting it in really aggressive alcohols, what's going to happen is that you're going to flip the chemistry on some of the androgenic. Naturally, it's androgenic. It's going to basically protect the telomeres and add life to the body and protect the genetic replication of the cells. But it's also going to boost the androgens and boost the male hormones in the body. But if you incubate it in really aggressive alcohol, it flips those to become estrogenic. Now, estrogens, phytoestrogens, are not necessarily bad in balance, but you really don't want that with your ginseng, especially if you're getting like a really high quality, a really old root, something that's very special. You want to like treat it with care and make sure it's delivering what ginseng has to offer.
Just a short clip from Brandon talking about the way they do the ginseng, just to give you a better idea of where this company is coming from, the quality and the ethics. Brandon and the Shen Blossom link on OneRadioNetwork.com. Our trademark is Know the Source, and that's one of the things we really have going on our One Radio Network. In our 10th year now for this show, is we know everybody, the people that we sell these products to promote. We know them, we've checked them out, we've used their products, and we know that you're going to get what the advertised, and we know that you're getting really the very best thing you possibly. I mean, check, you know, 50-year-old ginseng and organic sake, and come on, you know, that's the kind of people we promote. You're going to pay a little more for this, these things, whether it be the sulfur, actually the sauna's not, but in Daniel's thing and the ginseng and colostrum and all, but you're getting really, really premium, high-quality products, and it only costs a little more to go first class, and you're always better off. Our sulfur is 100% pure. Stephanie Seneff from MIT talked about the shikimate thing that Helen mentioned, and that's the glyphosates and breaking the sulfur cycle. And sulfur is a key component to the detox pathway that God figured out. Sulfur, the third most abundant mineral in our body, and these GMO foods screw up the whole sulfur cycle. And so if you get exposed to those whatsoever, you definitely want to try our sulfur and take it every day, teaspoon twice a day. It's pure, 100% pure, and it's the real deal. And you'll feel some juice from it. You'll feel more clarity, helps with creaky bones, brings more oxygen all over the body, and it plays a role in so many biological processes. I mean, the third most abundant mineral, God knew what she was doing. You know what I mean, Jelly Bean? And sulfur is critical, and it's hard to get enough sulfur. Just eat sulfur-bearing foods. You know, you only eat so much broccoli and cauliflower. And what is it? I don't even know. I guess all the different sulfur-bearing foods. But you might want to try it. People remember more of their dreams. It's pretty cool. Just click an order on the front page of One Radio Network. Three prices, United States, Canada. and around the world, or if you want more than 4 pounds and people just want to order 10 pounds today, I got an email this morning. We'll give them a special deal and a discount if you want more than 4 pounds. Email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com.
If you knew that you would die today, you saw the face of God and love, would you change? Would you change? If you knew that love can't break your heart, when you're down so low, you cannot fall, would you change?
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com.
I changed my sheets and my underwear. Does that count? Oh, she's not talking about that. Well, Hugo and Helen Diesler in farmingsecrets.com/Facebook if you want to check them out. So, Hugo, we hear so much about the idea of having a living soil. Talk to us a little bit about what kind of things you teach and you do to make all the little microbes and everybody happy down there to have a soil that's really living.
Well, the first thing, there's a number of things you can do, but the first thing is to protect the soil from the sunlight. Huh. So you either do that by mulching or having a lot of coverage by just the plant's leaves themselves. And the more, basically, the more vegetation you can grow, I'm talking about like cropping or orcharding, the more vegetation you can grow, the more you actually are transmitting atmospheric or cosmic energy, because plants are an antenna to the cosmos, as your bloke Phil Callahan proved. Mm-hmm. And the plant's actually transmitting energy from the cosmos, or from above the ground, or call it whatever you like, depending if you don't want to be spooked out about the cosmos. And through the photosynthesis process, it takes that energy and puts actually exudes it out of its roots. And when it exudes it out of its roots, then mycorrhiza fungi start working overtime, collecting all the nutrients that the plant wants. So the whole process has got to really start with green plants growing and covering the earth so that the sunlight doesn't bake the earth, and at the same time don't use poisons that damage the soil life, because the plant's roots are actually connected to the fungi, mycorrhiza fungi, and that's also connected to a whole lot of bacteria and other fungi. And it's the whole process that breaks down existing bedrock minerals that might be in the form of clay or silt or just very small particles. And at the same time, the earthworms, as Rudolf Steiner referred to them, as a cosmic being, because when you look at the earthworm, when you think about the earthworm, it only lives in soils that have got humus in it, plant material. If there's no plant material, the earthworm doesn't live in those soils. So the earthworm itself is actually a being that unites the soils or the silt or the bedrock materials to that of so the plants can take up its castings when it comes out of the earthworm's anus. And so the whole process of protecting the soil, growing plants, protecting the soil from sunlight or being baked out or over cultivation, and having this, as you sort of said, the soil life to produce the nutrients. And the more chemicals you use or the more products you use that hamper that connection between the plant root and the microorganisms or the fungi, The more backward you are going.
And also, Hugo, a lot of farmers disturb their soil all the time. And Hugo mentioned the mycorrhizal fungi. They can go for kilometres in your soil, like kilometres. It's unbelievable how far they'll go to get nutrients for the plant. And if you start disturbing the soil, you break them up and they can't do their job. And so you're hearing now, I don't know whether it's happening in America, on no-till, so that people plant directly into the soil rather than ploughing and planting. So that's quite a trend that's happening. And now, more recently, not using the weedicides to knock out every weed before you start to put your crop in.
Yeah. Do you have to keep adding something other than good water and sun and love and to keep this soil living year after year? Do you have to keep adding something to it, extra?
Their answer is yes and no. It's been proven now here that farmers can, in an orchard, by just using the plant as a conductor from the atmosphere to the soil and getting the process going, that they don't need any fertilizer whatsoever. This in orchards. Now, Alan Savory from Africa, come America, he's got about 50 million acres around the world using his principles on six continents, where the farmers do not use any fertilizers and their productivity goes up and they drought-proof their properties.
Wait, how does he do that?
Well, just from the process I just explained.
Really, so you just have a lot of green there, Hugo, and a lot of foliage, and God does the rest kind of thing with the sun and the planets and the cosmos?
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty cool. And it actually more production than if you...
Farmers just here in very harsh country on the sort of the western side of Queensland, it's on our eastern side of Australia, they have increased their, just by the stock management, by using some of these principles, they've last year increased their productivity, or the last few years, by 40%. Well, that's huge in those sort of areas.
From what were they doing before when you say up 40%, Hugo?
40% from the base.
From the base, what process were they doing before the 40% up?
No, they've increased their production.
What were they doing? Yeah, if you had zero and then you go 40%, what were they doing at that baseline?
They didn't start from zero. They're very good farmers. They are very good farmers to start off with. They just started looking at the soil and having the soil being covered more by debris, green growth, and that sort of thing. It's a soil coverage.
Fascinating. So you think, so the sun is actually can be a hindrance if you're just getting too much right on the soil because it just cooks it, bakes it?
Yeah. But it's more than just the sun.
Yeah.
Together with other man-made things like the wrong sort of fertilizers that upset the soil microbes, that upset the plants themselves.
Sure.
And as I explained, the dairy farmers who got weeds growing instead of the desired grasses growing because they're using very simplistic fertilizers.
Hmm. Oh, just to keep the grass growing. They're trying to keep the grass going so the cows have stuff to eat.
Yeah, and they end up having a paddock full of weeds, which you have to rip up. Not smart.
Yeah. So if we're just doing good stuff and water for grasses, even like for cows or goats or chickens or whatever, when you start messing with the chemical balance and the microbiome in the soil, that's where the weeds take hold?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because there's various reasons why weeds grow. Nature itself doesn't like bare soil, so they'll send in any weed to protect the soil, to cover the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a bit of a simplistic statement, but that's a fair statement too.
Yeah. We talked to a fellow, Paul Gauci. You ever hear of him, Paul Gauci? Up in the northwest. And he's a vet that Ancient Orange, I think, and barely can walk. And he's got some of the most amazing people come from all over the country to see it. And he's mainly been using wood chips, like from the trees around. They grind them up, you know? And he has like sometimes 2 and 3 feet of these things. And man, some of the stories he tells, he doesn't do anything except just spread across the wood chips, put a seed in there. And he doesn't do much of anything. And amazing production.
Yeah, and you've also got in your country, Gabe Brown.
Yeah.
Have you?
Yes, I have, yeah.
Yeah, he's a cover cropper. And he's now, the biodiversity of the crops he grows, and he's got continuous coverage in between his crops because he's planting into the crop. It's quite an intricate process, but very simple. He's always got coverage, and even in the snow, the animals are nosing into the soil and eating, apparently.
Wow.
It's really changed the face of farming. And we have a similar story here in Australia, Colin Sice, who is a pasture cropper. Mm-hmm. And he started planting crops into the pasture because he actually got burnt out and had no money and found that he just didn't need to do what he was doing before, which was ploughing and planting new pasture and all this sort of stuff. His brother has kept doing that system while Colin has gone across. And the first year he saved $80,000 in input. His brother doesn't ever want to know about it. And that Colin's very happy that his brother doesn't, because he measures his soil and the carbon in his soil. And Colin is way ahead with storing carbon in his soil, which means he's protecting himself with having moisture in the soil to become drought resistant. It's so simple and obvious when you start looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
But most farmers still don't realize that they must start with the soil.
Yeah. What big of a challenge? By the way, if you'd like to join the show, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Let's take this email as we go. Here's an email for you too from Mark. He says, I've found that there's a lot of controversy about compost sources. I've gotten some compost from my local municipal compost facility that is made mostly leaves and some grass clippings and tree clippings. I've used some of it as supplement to the chemical-free compost that I make because I can't make enough for all my gardens. I know there was a risk of some pesticides, herbicides, contamination from the municipal compost. Do your guests think that this risk is severe enough to not to use compost from these sources?
That's a very good question. In theory, the soils, if the soil's healthy, its microorganisms will convert to the toxins or neutralize the toxins. And they've found in the past that even toxic soils, by using seaweed liquids or seaweeds, that the seaweed also has some sort of qualities that gets the microorganisms going to neutralize toxins. So the first thing is you try not to use that compost. Don't try to use any product that has pesticides. Like here in Australia, they are stopping. They won't use barley that's been where the crop's been terminated. The brewers don't like it because it doesn't do the job properly. So if the brewers don't like the barley that doesn't do the job properly because it's sprayed with glyphosate, I think it's a warning. Not to use that sort of product or use it in moderation.
Yeah.
Can I just add, though, that a good compost, if you look at what Elaine Ingham's saying, it's got to be risen, heat up beyond 55 degrees to kill the toxins. And unless he knows, and there's a certificate that comes with that compost, and I doubt whether municipal suppliers would do it, that needs to be done twice. It needs to be risen to a heat, and you have to have proper moistures while you're making that compost. And people wrongly call waste material compost. Compost is a really fine product if it's done properly.
Yeah. So Well, maybe he could mix up the compost he gets into his compost pile and heat it up again.
Yeah, yeah. He could add it to his own compost. So
So it's almost like the body in a fever heating up the bad bugs kind of thing. It gets rid of it, huh?
And the other thing, too, if he had a worm farm, in other words, he had worms going through that, the worms would also neutralize it to a great degree. In fact, if it was too toxic, the worms wouldn't even want to go there.
Really?
It's a barometer in itself that you can get a container off for the product you're using, put the worms in there, float them in a little bit of water down the bottom, and if the worms die or try to escape, you know that the stuff is not good for the worms.
Really? But the worms themselves can actually eat up some of the toxins and not kill them?
In a minor way, yeah.
Minor way, yeah. Wow.
What are you guys saying?
It's together with other microbes that would be generating in the compost.
Right.
Yeah, always trial. Just trial.
Yeah.
Put a bit out, you know, and see what happens. Yeah.
Worms are a very good barometer as to how good or bad the compost is.
Hmm. Yeah, we had a story that someone did get compost, and it was meant to be the proper compost. And he thought, oh, I'll trial it first. And, yeah, he put the worms in a mixture with the compost, and the worms died. So he thought, well, I don't think that's much good for my paddock then.
Here's an email from Ellie. She's in Austin. She says, the soil here is not very good, so I've been doing raised bed gardens, small one, for my family for a long time. But I've never seen one worm, not one worm, and she's got them in caps. So she says, is there something that I should be concerned about, or can I buy worms and put them in there? And she wants to know. She's wormless in Austin. You know, that'll happen. That'll happen.
Well,
you
know? Not good.
That's not good. Okay.
Many years ago in Tasmania, that's south of Australia here, it's separated by a bit of sea, there was a large area where there's no worms on this hill slope. So, but every 10 foot or so, they put a plug of soil with worms or worm eggs in it. And over the years, they could see that these little plugs, a circle of green, just kept on growing bigger and bigger. So you can import worms or worm eggs. Just go to a place where there is worms, not necessarily worms, but where there's worms, there will be worm eggs, and bring them home. But if the conditions aren't right, they're not going to survive. But smart.
Yeah. I would suggest to her that she actually starts composting her materials, and if someone can supply her compost worms, and then what you do is get the worm waste, the vermicast, you can harvest that, and that's when you can put that with water and put it out in the ground. And it's going to take a while, but it is a way to restore life back into that soil.
Mm-hmm. Here's an interesting question. This is Regina. She is in Southern California. So what is your guest's opinions about simply going to Trader Joe's or Whole Foods? You probably heard of Whole Foods, Hugo, and, right, Helen?
Yeah, we've been.
Am I getting enough nutrients in my vegetables, in their opinion, vitamins and minerals?
Good question.
See, we've got a smart audience. We have a smart audience here.
You sure have.
You can buy a very simple thing called a Brix meter, which is a refractometer.
Yeah.
And start, just looking at seeing what the vegetables are like. For instance, you wouldn't buy an iceberg lettuce with a Brix of about 1 or 1.5 when you can buy a cos lettuce, which will have like 4 or 6 Brix. In other words, you can eat 1/4 of the cos lettuce to be the same value as an iceberg lettuce. I'm talking about Australian standards.
But to add on to that, to really know what you're eating, it's actually been quite a problem, because a Brix meter, a refractometer, will tell the sugars and whether your product is nutrient dense. And actually, if people wanted to get a chart from us or anything, or find out what a Brix meter is, ask them to let us know. They can put Patrick at the top, Patrick Olympics or something.
Oh, good.
Happy to let them, you know, to send an email with that information, because it's very important. I mean, just because it's organic does not mean to say it's got any better nutrients in it than a normal production.
Sure. It usually has a lot more.
But it doesn't necessarily have more. And they're actually working very hard on producing what's called a spectrometer, which you will just point at a vegetable.
Wow.
Or even a tablet, and it will tell you what's in it and whether it's ridgy-didge. And I can't wait for that machine to be perfected. It's called SGIO or something. It's in it's Israel and Italy are producing them, but they're not quite perfected yet. But once that comes in, the supermarkets and whole food places, even if they say they've got good food, everyone will know whether they do or not because they have their own little machine, and it's going to be connected straight to your phone, mm-hmm. so that you can immediately get a chart that will tell you.
I've heard that lots of things are picked on an unripe state for transport, yes. and all of that. Is that, obviously it's not the best way to do it, but is that really detrimental to the overall quality of produce for people that buy it from the hippie food stores?
Yeah, because the sugars haven't actually been allowed to come up into that fruit or vegetable, so you're just not getting the same nutrients. They'll hold them into a cold store for mm-hmm. cool store for 6 months, 9 months. And it reminds me of a little story, Patrick, about one of the major food chains. They grow special huge potatoes so they can have those lovely looking narrow long chips.
Yeah, oh yeah.
They're sprayed, I think, about 30 times. They have to wear suits to go into the storehouse because they're gassing off so much poisonous material. It's horrific when you start looking at the story of where your food comes from.
Mm-hmm. And Patrick, that's why more and more people, especially in America, the American people are more wake up than the Australian people, want to know who's supplying their food,
yeah.
and where to buy high quality food. And they want to move away from dubiously produced, whether it's dairy products or pigs or anything like that, or chooks. They just want to work with a farmer who they know is producing the food in the way that they'd be happy to buy or know that that's what they want to eat.
Sure.
And that's a very big movement in America.
We have farmers markets here in Dripping Springs, Texas, if you can believe it, that they'll have right there, they'll have eggs, and they'll say, and the feed that we feed them when we don't have enough grass is organic, non-GMO, with no soy. Isn't that amazing? I mean, it's really interesting. This is Dripping Springs, Texas. So the awareness, is it like that in Australia as well? Growing?
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's growing rapidly. Mm-hmm.
And the problem is the counter-argument for people who have caged eggs. So we have to have caged eggs because we can't possibly produce enough eggs if we just rely on pastured resources. And there's quite a movement for people to start having their chooks, and they're actually connecting little laneways at the back of properties so they can share
sure.
a flock of hens and things. Yeah, you know, it's lovely what's happening, actually.
I mean, you can go to the mainstream stores here, Hugo and Helen, and I mean, some mainstream stores, and they have all kinds of different options for cage-free eggs, pasture. I mean,
yes.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, boy, the awareness. And I guess people go on YouTube and they see all these pictures of these poor little chickens, and I don't want those eggs. It's like, I don't want those eggs.
They even say 10,500 chooks per acre here is still acceptable. Like that's the standard they've cut off at. But you can't have more than that if you want to say you've got organic pastured eggs.
Now wait a minute, 10,000 chooks. 10,000
hectares.
I'm sorry.
10,000 hectares allowed to be called free range.
It's ridiculous.
And the chooks don't even, they've got these little small holes out of a whacking big shed. Can you imagine a shed that holds 10,000 hens?
Oh my God.
small holes, and the chooks are expected to go out of these small holes.
Oh, that's a shame. I don't even want to think about that. I just don't like it. I just like, oh, no. Just don't want to buy. I just don't, yeah.
So an app, Clucker, which you point your phone at the box of eggs, and it tells you whether what they're claiming is right. It's fantastic. And you can go on and you say, it says free-range eggs, but you point your phone at the box and says a big cross comes up saying, no, you know, this isn't, this material, this information isn't right.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's cool. If you'd like to be on the show before we go here this morning, it is Patrick at oneradionetwork.com, 888-663-6386, Helen and Hugo Diesler, farmingsecrets.com. You can do the / Facebook thing. And I have a couple other questions, but before that, go ahead and just give folks an idea of some of the things that you offer at farmingsecrets.com if they want to kind of dig into this more and become more cool farmers.
Well, we're ready and keen to help anyone who needs help. So that's why we would like people to go onto the Facebook. We have got, we do offer courses online. We also have quite a range of DVDs that we sell. And we do have a club that people can join. It's a paid membership. And if people wanted to know more about that, if they just go onto the main website, they can find information there. We're actually going through revamping everything. So apologize ahead with changes we're making if you don't get all the links coming through. But we have set out to film successful farmers not using chemicals, and we're passionate about it. So we'd be very happy to help anyone with any of their problems. And they can email us too if they like, just helen@farmingsecrets.com, and happily answer questions. But let us know if you're on the show, and we can let Patrick know we've had a chat to you.
Yeah. So what do you think about animals, chickens, cows, whatever, sheepies, eating GMO grains, and then we consuming the little chickens in that? Do you think that's a problem? Personally.
Absolutely.
Well,
I mean, never mind the antibiotics. Say they're antibiotic free, right? And they say, okay, no drugs, but they're not organic, so they could be giving them GMO corn, which most corn is, right, or soy. Do you think that's a problem for us humans to eat these little guys?
Absolutely.
Well, it must be, because I saw a film in one of your films, and that this the fellow who's growing pigs, and he found that his pig conception just went down to almost very, very low, because he's feeding the corn, GM corn. He took it off the. The things the pigs started performing properly. Put the gave them GM corn again, and down all the problems started coming again. So if it's going to affect pigs, that was one experiment. It's quite frankly, I wouldn't want to eat that pig meat, and I think anyone else would want to avoid it as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, even identical twins, and if they do a transplant or something, they have to. This is talking about human beings. They can't even take that transplant of exactly the same genetic coding and everything without antibiotics and a whole lot of things to make that transplant work. And if we are eating something like GMO, which is a totally alien genetic coding to our system, there's no way we can absorb it, and it does affect our bodies. Arden Anderson's emphatic that GM food is affecting the health of the Americans.
Yeah, I think the science is there, isn't it? I mean, the work of, we mentioned Stephanie Seneff, MIT, and others, it's just there. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
In Australia, they grew a couple of crops, which they tried to grow, and they found, I think it was a pea crop,
Oh, yes.
And when they grew it, they found it was so bad that they had to stop the experimentation on it. So that was just on a pea crop.
And that was with rats or something, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. They just died. They didn't thrive at all.
We have been hearing quite a bit about non-GMO foods being sprayed with the glyphosate stuff, not the Roundup, but just the glyphosate itself to dry them out and make it easier to harvest and all that. Is that going on down there as well?
Increasing rapidly.
Wow, man.
It's sickening, but it's happening.
It's unbelievable.
I know. So I guess, I mean, we are just destined to be organic little monsters. We got to, right? We have no choice.
Mm.
Right?
We have to be vigilant.
Yeah. So, Hugo, what do you think about this whole idea of drift? Many of the farmers talk about that. But I guess, you know, we can't get too carried away and throw the baby out with the bathwater. What are we going to eat, right? I mean, you know what I'm saying. But is it an issue of getting the drift from a GMO crops down the road?
I don't know about the drift from GMO crops, but the drift from the sprays. It's not so much the sprays that drift. It's they volatilize. They actually go into the atmosphere, not like a mist or anything like that. And they just sort of, I know myself when I used to spray under a particular tree, or here in Australia when they spray those things in vineyards, it was days later that product would actually drift into the neighbour's place. It not necessarily that wasn't actually the spray. So that drift is called drift, or it gets atomized.
Go ahead.
And it's a huge danger.
I think you're
actual physical drift overspray is one thing, but when it gets atomized, it's just more dangerous because it goes much further.
I think you'll find our next guest interesting. And if you guys are going to go to sleep, we'll have the podcast up in a few hours and you can listen to it in the morning, Judy Hoy. And that's what she's saying, that this drift is coming all over across the mountain there in Montana and affecting animals nowhere near, you know, the GMO stuff. So, yeah, she's on the same track. And did you hear us talking about this idea that all the different things that she's seen with the animals and their underbite and their formation of their bodies and stuff? It's wow. It's like, wow, man.
Yeah. It's pretty scary.
Let's see if we have something else here. Oh, somebody wants to know if you have any opinion on a product called EM1, Revitalized Soil Life. EM1, ever heard of that one?
Well, heard of EM.
EM could be effective microbes.
Yeah, infective microbes. Yeah, effective microbes.
I don't know what the figure one is, but it has a very good reputation here in Australia.
But it all goes back to the soil again and the condition of the soil. And why add microbes when you actually can get the soil working? I don't know. I mean, we're just not for spending a lot of money putting stuff in. And when people put things like that under the microscope, and I'm not saying with this particular microbe, but they have found there's nothing moving or working with these microbes, even when they're, because they can freeze dry them and then bring them back to life. And they're paying hundreds of dollars for those things that really make a bit of your own compost and get things going. You know, it all takes time and understanding.
Sure.
But
yeah. Jeremy wants to know what Hugo and Helen used to cover to keep the sun off of the soil in their garden. What do you do? They want to know.
Well, for starters, I don't overweed. And the other thing is that any sort of mulch that we get from any sort of leaves that we get fallen down, fall down, we heap up. We don't burn off at all. Even twigs, even things up to sort of 2 inches, just let them rot down. And funnily enough, I've got a neighbour we've got 4 acres here, which is, that's 4 acres, your sort of term. And the neighbour next door would burn all his leaves. So I asked, and smell us out at the same time. So I asked him to drop the leaves over the fence. So I put this material down, weed mat down, and he drops his leaves of his chestnut over the fence. So I've got this fence, and then after 6 months, these leaves, because they are so, they just rot down so quickly. The funny thing is that I get earthworms in those leaves, and I put them on my garden. So I've got this wonderful earth. So you just cultivate, get any sort of material, any good material, especially like from tree leaves, which are quite complex. Well, trees are far more complex than just lawn clippings, and create your own mulch.
Yeah. Let me say hi a second. Judy, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, Judy. Hoi. Hold on a second. Hold on a second. We're on the air with Scott, and I thought I'd have you guys say hi. Scott, I'm in Helen and Hugo Disler. They're in Melbourne, Australia, and they were talking about the different drift from the glyphosates and the chemicals and all that. Could you quickly tell them, as long as, I didn't plan this, but this may be kind of fun, about your experience with the glyphosates and all that coming over the mountain that you talked to us about there in Montana?
Roundup or... Roundup, glyphosate, is the main ingredient in Roundup, as you all know. Mm-hmm. And so I probably, we'll just call it Roundup. But it and all the other chemicals that are used on all of the wheat fields and potato fields and on and on and on fields in the states straight west of the Bitterroot Mountains, are picked up by the wind and carried to the mountains, and then they get concentrated against the back of the mountains, and then they kind of plop over the mountains and into the valleys. And so the valleys get way more, a really big hit. And if it snows, then all of the snow on the tops of the mountains get filled with the pesticides, and then when the snow melts like it's doing right now, it all runs into all the rivers and streams and kills all of the fish and everything else.
Man. that's like a bad movie, isn't it?
It's worse than a bad movie. Bad movies have never thought up what I've been seeing the last 22 years.
Wow. Isn't that fascinating, Helen and Hugo?
It's heartbreaking, actually.
Yeah. Well,
it's heartbreaking.
We'll let you guys go to sleep now, if you want to.
Before they get lost, I have a question.
Yes.
Do they ever see domestic animals in Australia with underbites?
Can't say we're experts in that area.
Oh, well, you don't have to be an expert. I just wondered if you have ever heard of anybody mention it or if photos... Here in the United States, they post photos on the internet all the time of animals with underbite, sheep, goats, horses, you name it.
Yeah, wow. Coming in like that.
It's not a common problem at all here, or it's not that we know of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Hugo and Helen...
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay. Did you have something else? Go ahead, Julie.
Well, I just wanted to ask him if is a lot of Roundup used in Australia?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Absolutely. And, you know, maybe you'd also like to, you know, swap emails and we can keep in touch too.
Yeah. Lots of
it. Yes, that would be good.
Yeah. Well, Judy, I'll give you Helen and Hugo's contact. Helen and Hugo Diesler, we'll let you go to sleep, or you can listen to Judy or listen to her in the morning on the podcast, farmingsecrets.com. Great show, and you can check them out on farmingsecrets.com/Facebook. Thank you all for staying up very late there in Melbourne, and say hi to all the The what do you have down there? Kangaroos. You got roos, right? You have roos.
If you, and possums.
If you run across some roos with an underbite, you let Judy know, and we'll see if we can help them out there.
I'll probably hear a million of them tomorrow. That's right. What always happens.
That's why it always happens. All right, Mr. and Mrs. Deesters, thanks a lot for being here.